Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. If you want to participate in this discussion, we welcome your calls. Our phone number here is toll-free, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Eric, I was just perusing through the book and noted a couple quotes that Jefferson had about keeping the government simple and out of debt. I found one here, and he says, this is on page 73 of your book, says, to preserve the independence of the people, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. We must make our election between economy and liberty or profusion and servitude. Can you imagine what Jefferson would think today to realize the debt of this nation and the burdens that have been placed upon us and you know, future generations and, you know, and even who knows what will happen with the dollar at some point down the road?
Well, that you're talking now about the great force of Jefferson's advocacy for freedom and independence and what his ideal of liberty was all about. Again, it was the ideal was freedom from coercion. That's the concept, freedom from coercion. And so he was against all forms of tyranny over the mind of man, as he famously put it. I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And, of course, when you start to think about what that means, you say, well, that means, of course, tyranny of government over the individual as it's, you know, ordinarily thought of, but also government over religion, religion over government, individual over individual, nation over nation, and even generation over generation. He said, we shall all consider ourselves unauthorized to saddle posterity with our debts and morally obligated to pay them ourselves within what may be deemed to be the period of a generation. So he was saying he was against even what we might call today intergenerational tyranny, as you were just describing it.
Yeah, it's just, here's another quote of his on your page 55 in the chapter you entitled Simplicity. I am for a government rigorously frugal and simple. The accounts of the United States ought to be and may be as simple as those of a common farmer and capable of being understood by common farmers. I'm not sure if he was directly referring to, you know, the you know, balancing the budget and so forth there, but it seems to me that he would be, you know, vehemently opposed to the financial situation that we've gotten ourselves into in this country now and for a long time. I mean, it's just...
I think that's exactly right. I mean, he was a great advocate of he felt that the government, that the very nature of the institution of government, or really any large institution, but particularly government, because it commands the taxing power,
right,
and the military power and so forth. He felt that the very nature of the tendency of a very large institution like that, it was to aggrandize power to itself and take away power from other institutions in society and the basic citizenry itself. And, of course, the taxing power and the debt power are very close. I mean, you can say, well, the federal government taxes too much, but then if you turn around and borrow too much, all you're really doing is committing taxation for future generations.
Right.
So they're pretty much one and the same in Jefferson's mind. And he said that he said that citizens are the only sure guardians of their liberties. And they have to guard the tendency of government to take away from their liberties and from their purses. And so he really felt that you needed to educate this. This is where the Enlightenment comes in. Enlighten the people generally, he said. This is famously inscribed on the Jefferson Memorial in Washington. Enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppression of body and mind will vanish like evil spirits at the dawn of day. If you enlighten the people, they can be guardians of their liberties and prevent these excessive tendencies of the institutions of government.
Wow. Well, Eric, we do have a caller, but we're due for a break here, so we'll be right back and we'll take our first caller. Hang with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity, where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. My special guest with me is Eric Peterson. We're discussing his book, Light and Liberty. And, Eric, we have our first caller, John from Tennessee. John, go ahead.
Hello, Peter and Eric. I appreciate your program. I guess the reason that I called, Eric, is I'm enjoying the quotes. And I was wondering, I mean, I've got a quote from Thomas Jefferson that I'll give you in a moment. But what do you think that he would have to say about the immigration problem in America today?
That's very much in everybody's minds, isn't it? And it goes back to the fundamental processes by which our
I can barely hear Eric, Peter.
Let me speak up here a little bit. Is that any better?
Thank you. That's better for me.
Very
is that
good.
Better,
thank
John?
You.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, good. And thank you for the question, John, because that issue is really a front burner issue for our country today. And it's interesting. Jefferson's thinking about so many issues had a dualistic quality to it, you might say. There was a fundamental premise that he would articulate, but then there was a cautionary secondary premise that he would articulate also to sort of keep the whole thing in balance. And on the subject of immigration, I think that's it's a very good example of that, because he was a great believer in the right of expatriation, the right to leave your country and go to another country. He clearly recognized the immigration as the fundamental bedrock of the process by which the country, you know, would be built. And so he was a believer in movement, the free movement of people, the rights of people to expatriate, and the value of immigration to our country. But that was the major premise, okay? But then you come to this more nuanced view, and he goes on to say that you can't have unlimited immigration, because if you do, you then have to look at who's coming. What kind of background are they coming from? And will they bring a background here in such numbers of people that it will overwhelm what's going on here? And if you value what's going on here in terms of the, you know, representative republic that we have, the representative process of self-government dedicated to the rights of man and the fundamental level of education we have here, and particularly identifying with our fellow man, respecting the rights and the societies and the cultures of other people, not engaging in violence and so forth, and, you know, the level of enlightenment, if you might say, of our society, the general level, if you value that, and then you open the door to massive, massive numbers of people who aren't necessarily on the same wavelength and who bring a different set of values here, you could kind of threaten what's going on here in terms of the light that's necessary to sustain the liberty, if John was hearing the program earlier. And so there you have kind of a nuanced answer, a great believer in immigration as a fundamental way of building up our country, fresh ideas, enthusiastic people, people interested in pursuing the American dream and so forth. But at the same time, a note of reason, you know, a note that says that you've got to be reasonable in opening the doors so that the fundamental American level of societal advancement and enlightenment is not significantly undercut by large numbers of people. And so,
well, you see, I believe, Eric, that the founding fathers, they were brilliant men. They understood that for everything that you do, whether you do it with good intention or you do it with improper intent, you know, the laws of physics say that there, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So I'd like to leave you with Jefferson's quote. And it basically, you've surmised it, but the quote is, speaking of unfettered immigration, they will bring with them the principles of the governments they leave, imbibed in their early youth. These principles, with their language, I'm sorry, I'm driving. These principles, with their language, they will transmit to their children in proportion to their numbers. They will share with us the legislation. They will infuse into their spirit, warp and bias its direction, and render it a heterogeneous and coherent directed mass. And that's what we're seeing now. You know, people don't want to believe that the principles of this nation was founded upon. Now, they may not be Christian, but they were godly principles. And when you allow people to come in, and personally I believe they were Christian principles, but when you allow people to come in from every nation, just open the doors, come on in, we're here, do it legally, we're here. You're opening your country up to subversion, whether anyone realizes it or not, which I believe is why Franklin said, we've given you a republic if you can keep it. You know, we look at this statue in New York Harbor, and we say, isn't that a beautiful thing, the Statue of Liberty? That down at the bottom, when you read the inscription, basically says, send us all your poor folks, everyone that you don't want, they're welcome here, we're a melting pot. Personally, I'm thankful for immigration. My people are, you know, from England and Ireland and Scotland and who knows where else. But I believe the Statue of Liberty to this nation is becoming more of a curse than a gift.
Well, anything else, John?
No, I'll listen to your comments.
Well, I appreciate
your
call. Eric, if you wanted to respond to that, go ahead. I have some thoughts, too.
And then we can move on. But I think the caller, John, demonstrates the difficulty that we have in reconciling our general openness with the general need to be reasonable about how far that openness can go before we begin to start undermining the society that we've built here. So the rule of reason has to prevail, and there have to be reasonable limitations on the degree to which we can admit folks from other countries before we begin to affect our society here.
Right. Well, my take on the immigration issue in light of the writings of Jefferson and other founding fathers is that had we adhered to the limitations on government that they proposed, you know, a central government with, you know, as Madison said, with few and defined powers, and the states have the rest of the powers and so forth, if we had adhered to that, I think we would have kept a society that did not encourage people to come over and just take advantage of the healthcare system and the education and everything that this country affords people, but rather to come here and make their own way, which I think is how immigrants came, you know, up until, say, the early 1900s. People didn't come here with the expectation that all of their medical and education needs for their kids and everything would be provided for. They came here, in many cases, with nothing and started out and within a generation made their way and then, you know, perhaps made enough money for others to come over. But I think a great deal, in my opinion, of the immigration problem is precisely because we have strayed so far from the vision of Jefferson and our other founding fathers.
This really has to do with the whole concept of light and liberty. Again, to Jefferson's quote, that light and liberty go together, no light, no liberty.
Right.
And the practicalities of building an enlightened society on this principle of identification with your fellow man, a sense of oneness, a particularly respect for others,
right,
moderation, tolerance, and this kind of thing, and in its worst form, of course, ignorance, the opposite of light, is you know, a sense of separativity, of division, of difference, of tribalism,
right.
my clan versus your clan. And the nature of the enlightenment of society in Jefferson's mind was to try to get away from that kind of limited focus on your own small group, your own tribe, if you will, your own clan.
Right.
Move beyond that to a sense of acceptance, respect, tolerance of all other groups.
And right.
To the extent that immigrants bring in that sense of my clan versus your clan and don't integrate, that's the thing that I think people are concerned about.
Right.
And I think, you know, that our society is so vast and so complex, it's very difficult to make these judgments on an aggregate basis. But you see so much concern about this today that it may be that a lot of Americans are experiencing a sense of, hey, wait a minute here, there's not as much assimilation and moderation. And,
right.
Sense of the larger picture here that we're used to seeing here from some of our newcomers. That's
right.
The real challenge that we have to sort of see whether that is real or not.
Right. Well, and I think, of course, we can move on, but I think one specific instance in which you see that is where the schools and other aspects of our society try to accommodate people with their own language. And I think it's great to learn another language. I studied German extensively in college, but if you're going to function in the United States of America in any real sense, you certainly have to learn English, and I think we do a great disservice to the children of these immigrants when we don't make that very clear to them that, you know, early on you can certainly retain your customs and your culture and your own language, but you're going to have to acquire English if you're going to make it in the society.
It's quite ironic that when you go to Europe, you find that English is the universal language all across Europe, and the
right.
European nations teach their children English as much as they teach their own language.
Right.
And here we are the speakers of the universal language.
Right.
We ought to have everyone here be capable in that, just as the Europeans are.
Right, right. Well, we do have another caller. We have another John from Texas. So, John, go ahead. You're on the line.
Yes, well, you pretty much have taken the wind out of my sails. I just want to reiterate pretty much, I guess, what you have said, and that is... I think that Thomas Jefferson's intent, it's obvious from the letters that he has written and his personal beliefs, that his intentions were to preserve the United States and the fledgling nation, not to disrupt it or to intervene
John, excuse me, I need to interrupt you. Please hold on through the break. We're due for a break right now. If you can hold on and continue with those thoughts, we'll pick it up after the break, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you. We'll be back in just a minute, folks. Stay with us.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Introducing the new Blueprint Water Unit. This one-of-a-kind water technology uses natural frequencies to clean harmful toxins from your drinking water. We start with one of the best four-stage reverse osmosis systems. Then we retrofit the Blueprint water system with twin vortices. This primary technology is designed to clear harmful water memory. We then imprint Blueprint frequencies harmonic to the human body. This is the only known living water recreated by live essence infusion. According to reports from users, the water helps balance the body's internal pH. Others have said the water has helped promote weight loss through detoxification. This water is so good, your body begins to crave its healthy input. For more information, call Natural Solution toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that's 866-885-6625.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in here. We have John from Texas on the line. John, sorry to interrupt you for the break. If you could sort of recap where you were going and then just continue with your thoughts.
Okay. I think that Jefferson, you know, his letters and his writings, it becomes very apparent that he was wanting to conserve what had been established, and that he was very concerned about capitalism. He was very concerned about globalism, and he was very concerned about expanding government. He never, any of his teachings or his letters were derogatory or against the United States and the government that had been newly established. And the problem that we're facing today, in my point of view, is that we have immigrants and illegal aliens that are entering the United States, and they want to have their cake and eat it too, in as much as they want to immigrate, come to the United States, but they don't really want to be Americans. And they don't really cherish the American way of life.
Let me interject.
They want to maintain.
I'm sure that's true of some, but I don't think that's probably true of all immigrants. Some really value what we have to offer
okay.
here from a philosophical point of view, as well as the prosperity, I think. Some.
Well, look at Southern California.
Right.
And what's going on. And it's going on here in Texas, too. It's not, as widespread as in Southern California, but it's going on here, too. And when you have a group of people that want to immigrate and they want to maintain in its entirety their old culture, their old beliefs, and their own and their old society, societal way of life, that is not immigration. That is just moving from one locale to another and maintaining status quo.
Okay, you want to let's let Eric respond to that, okay?
Maybe a couple of thoughts there. I as I was saying earlier, I think there is, you know, when you have...
I can't hear him.
Yeah, let me try to speak up a little bit here.
Thank you.
When you have such massive immigration in a concentrated way, you know, it does raise some of the issues that John is raising here. But, you know, we've had similar waves of immigration in the past, the Catholic immigration from Europe in the 1840s and 50s and 60s. Immigration from Eastern Europe in the 1920s and so forth, and with waves of people coming in by the millions. And somehow our society was able to adapt to that. You know, there was a lot of concern, you know, would these people remain their own kind of cultural unit, or would they integrate into the larger society? But you know, by and large, it's worked out, and I think we can be fairly optimistic that over time it'll work out. The real question I think we face today is, you know, we just want to make sure that through the educational processes, through public dialogue and interaction, that whoever comes here with the intention of remaining here really does embrace the American values in which we all respect each other. We all tolerate each other. We all seek the best in each other. We're all trying to uplift our society, and we don't kind of adhere to ourselves as small, clannish, tribal units. That's the challenge. That's the great American spirit. Hopefully, we'll have a recognition of our laws, there'll be reasonable enforcement of the laws, and that we won't have such massive numbers of people coming in that they just won't embrace the real America as so many preceding waves of immigrants. We all know immigrants in our personal lives who are both here legally and not legally. We know them as generally as good people. And I think we can only hope that as previous groups of immigrants have done, they will embrace the real American vision.
Right. Any other thoughts, John?
Well, I understand what he's saying, and I hope that turns out to be the case. But it's hard to conceive that happening when you have people driving around with bumper stickers, and they're everywhere on their cars, the bumper stickers are talking about the invasion and the conquering of the United States. I don't believe that these people have the intent to do, you know, what he was talking about. The message being sent is that this is a invasion, and immigration is not an invasion. There's a difference between invasions and immigration. And in the past, also, when you're talking about previous immigration to the United States and people relocating here and so forth, my mother was an immigrant. She came through Ellis Island, and it took her 7 years after living here. She had her... Take English lessons, learn to speak English, and take a competency test, and then after waiting 7 years, mm-hmm. she was given U.S. citizenship. And people had to work for that.
We're due for another break, John. If you want to continue, I'll hold you, but we've got to take a break, okay?
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and hang up and let
Eric
you go.
Respond. Okay. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes, folks. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Morning, neighbor.
Hey, shouldn't you be at work?
I am. As a matter of fact, I pulled another all-nighter.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, at least I'm making money 24/7. But I never have to go to work.
So, what do you do?
Not very much at all now. About a month ago, I heard about this website. It's got a funny name. It's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can earn $1,200 to $12,000 a week starting the very first week.
Oh, is that how you bought that new mower?
Yeah, and the motorcycle I've always wanted, too. You should log on. Find out how you can become financially free.
So what was that website?
It's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Just wait, I'll go get a pen so I can write that down.
You don't need to write it down. It's easy to remember. DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Yeah, DidYouRobBillGates.com. That is easy.
It's easy, and the money is awesome.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're discussing Thomas Jefferson, and we've had to interrupt our caller, John, from Texas a couple times. John, go ahead and finish your thoughts, if you could, and then we'll let Eric respond again. Is John still there? Perhaps he hung up. Well, I don't know if you've... I think you sort of, Eric, answered him in your remarks about Jefferson's... beliefs early on that he believed in immigration, but that there should be some, if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly, let me know, but some reasonable limitation on that.
Yes, so that our current society is not undermined by the perhaps different values of other societies. Maybe this is a good way that we could kind of segue to more of an international perspective here, because when you're talking about immigration, you're talking about other nations.
Right.
And Thomas Jefferson really was a great believer in the potential of the American ideal, if you will, to the ideal to immigrate to other countries, not people, but the ideas that he was talking about. He said that the ball of liberty is now so firmly in motion that it will roll around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fairly dramatic statement at the time, because America was the only republic, you know, only government with a representative self-government in that existed in the world at that time.
Right.
And all the founders were hopeful that our ideals and our example would inspire people around the world to sort of rise up and improve their own conditions and move toward representative self-government. That was self-government was vital to Thomas Jefferson's way of thinking. He very much believed, he said, every man and every body of men possesses the right of self-government. Very, very powerful view of one
right.
of our rights of self. I govern myself as an individual. You govern yourself.
Right.
My nation governs itself. Your nation governs itself. I was very interested and in intrigued by one of the messages that you had on a few moments ago from one of your sponsors, talking about what that commentator viewed as the morality of the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And that commenter was saying that he viewed it as an immoral exercise.
Right.
And it was very interesting from Jefferson's point of view. You know, I've been asked occasionally, what would Jefferson think about those kind of international, you know, ventures? And yes, it can definitely be critiqued if you have a certain view of as being something that is not moral. But Jefferson had additional principles that he would have brought to bear on a question like that. He felt that that it was the right of self-government that was being you know, potentially trampled on there. Every country has the right to govern itself. He very much believed in the idea that he said, "I hope our wisdom will grow with our power, and teach us that the less we use our power, the greater it shall be." In other words, if we show some self-restraint
right.
in the exercise of military or economic power, we'd actually gain more in the friendship and respect, esteem, and particularly the cooperation
right.
of people around the world. And the actual exercise of power itself would. He believed that every country has the right to govern itself. He believed that it's fundamentally wrong to engage in wars of conquest.
Right.
He said that there be one principle more deeply rooted in the mind of every American than any other. It is that we should have nothing to do with conquest. So he would see it
right.
probably as a war of conquest. He'd probably also see that, maybe even more fundamentally, that it was unwise in the sense of, going back to the title of the book, Light and Liberty, you know, you have to ask yourself, do the people in that particular society or country have enough light to acquire and sustain liberty? You know, is the sense of respect, tolerance, and so forth, valuing self-government above all other blessings,
right?
Identifying with your fellow man, not being, you know, too attached, you know, to tribalism or, you know, that kind of thing. Do they have enough of that light to have liberty? And so the idea that we're kind of exporting liberty is maybe that's nice to see, you know, evolving around the world, but to Jefferson, it was fundamentally axiomatic that if the society didn't have enough light, that they couldn't sustain their liberty. And so he would say that, you know, the enlightenment of a country, the advancing of the civilization of each country in its own terms, has to proceed, you know, slowly and organically in every country. It's, you know, like the natural processes. You just can't do it overnight. So
right.
essentially, you can't get to liberty in our full sense or representative self-government overnight, because you can't get to a societal advancement of civilization and enlightenment overnight. It's a slow, gradual process. And the people that have the right of self-government in those countries have to find their own way. There's no other way. And so in addition to, you know, moral considerations, there are very practical, you know, insights that Jefferson had when he was offering, you know, Americans of his generation and ours advice about international relations and foreign policy.
All right. Well, let's take a slightly different tack here in the remaining 20 minutes, Eric, if we could. One of the principal reasons for me doing this show is my concern about what our federal government is doing. And you know, certainly may disagree with me on this issue, and you're welcome to speak about it. But what I see happening since 9/11 is just an expansion of our government in ways that I think trample on the Constitution and certainly the spirit of Thomas Jefferson and others. We've seen the Patriot Act. We've seen the Military Commissions Act. We've seen evidence that our government is spying on Americans, at least through the collection of phone records that are provided through the phone companies. People, you know, can agree or disagree about the merits of the Iraq war, but it was not a declared war, as I believe Congress has the power to do. And, you know, Jefferson, I mean, wrote about this in the beginning of the Declaration of Independence. So let me just read a bit from that and then have you respond a little bit. He says, of course, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it." Then he goes on a bit, just a bit later, and he says, "All experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed." So he's writing those words when we're trying to throw off the yoke of England, and in my view, Eric, we have even greater oppressions from our own federal government to this day, and I see citizens suffering the evils which are sufferable rather than throwing them off. And I think we're afraid of our government, and Jefferson said, if I can rely on the quotes here on the website, that I'll have to paraphrase, I can't find it, when people are afraid of their government, well, here it is, when people fear the government, there is tyranny, when government fears the people, there is liberty. So I guess I would sort of throw it to you and say, have we reached that stage where we are being oppressed as much as we were from England, and in which incited, you know, Thomas Jefferson to write the Declaration of Independence and for us to go to war against that country?
Well, I would tend to share the concerns that you're expressing there, both from my own viewpoint and also just trying to, you know, intuit what Thomas Jefferson would have to say about our current condition. You know, you hear a lot of talk about patriotism today. And people, without really thinking about it, often tend to equate patriotism with love of the government,
right?
You know, and the actions of the government, rather than love of country,
right?
And Jefferson was a great patriot, and you know, he was part of the government for a long time. And his view of patriotism was love of your country. Now, think about what our country is. It's obviously our beautiful lands. Our sources of our resources, our institutions, you know, our traditions, our people, our spirit, and a way of life, if you will, all of which is independent of any kind of government.
Right.
That is our country. And most fundamentally, our country is our common set of beliefs. The vision, if you will, is articulated by Thomas Jefferson. That's what America is. It's a vision,
right,
of how to live a decent, uplifting and happy life of service to yourself and service to your fellow man. And so that is patriotism. It's love of your country. It's not love of your government and your government's actions. Okay, so now you look at the actions of our government, not only our president who seems to cherish the exercise of power, but also the Congress itself and its really passive response to that and enacting legislation which, you know, responds to the concerns and fears of the day, and you go, is it patriotic to support those kinds of attitudes and actions of the government, or is it more patriotic, or is it really patriotic to act from your love of your country and try to steer it in the right direction in times of fear and concern? Jefferson wrote, "In order to procure tranquility, we must avoid fear and desire, which he called the two principal diseases of the human mind." And so in the aftermath of the tragedy at 9/11, the concern, the fear of the people has been raised and has been fanned and fired by all sorts of voices in the government and in the media and so forth.
Right.
And it's that sense of fear, that an insecurity that Jefferson felt was the one real threat to the continued vibrancy of our freedoms and our representative self-government. He would be very concerned about all the issues that you referred to. In fact, he experienced an uncannily similar set of conditions
I'm sure you recall in the late 1790s when there was a similar buildup of military forces, increasing the national debt. There was the country really was in the grip of a war fever.
Mm-hmm.
It passed the infamous Sedition Act,
right,
which made it a crime to simply utter an opinion,
right,
critical of the great Adams administration. President Adams, to his great discredit, signed that bill. His federal prosecutors arrested 24 newspaper editors. 14 of them were prosecuted, and 10 were actually jailed, and many of them were rotting in jail as political prisoners when Thomas Jefferson took office 2 years later. And the silencing or intimidating effect of that was palpable. Jefferson was serving as vice president at the time, and he said the tenor of that and the hostility that was engendered by the ruling party at that time was so intense that people actually crossed the street to avoid speaking to one another. He said that if he and his office of vice president had given up and left town, Philadelphia was the capital at the time, many others would have done so. And as he said, the cause would have been lost forever. Can you imagine that? This is Thomas Jefferson saying that the cause of the American Revolution of independence, freedom, light, liberty, and oneness, and so forth, would have been lost forever. The feelings were so intense, the sense of fear and the need to sort of conservatively hold on to power and not allow anyone to criticize the central government was so intense that it was almost lost. He said those labors of him and others, however, saved the country. So we're kind of living through, 200 years later, an eerily similar climate of fear in which the government in its various branches, under the guise of protecting the people, is actually trampling on their rights. I don't think we've crossed that line yet, but we're getting pretty close to it. And unless the citizenry realizes that you have to sort of ease up on the fear a little bit, focus on what you're really concerned about, which your rights, and speak up in opposition to these encroachments upon our traditional longstanding rights, we are, in fact, at risk of losing them.
Yeah. There again, it goes back to his claim that liberty really lives in the hearts and minds of men and not simply in these parchment documents, parchment barriers, as he referred to, right?
Yes, absolutely. Thomas Jefferson was an optimist. He really thought that when these periods came along, we'd find some way to get rid of them. He said it is part of the American character to consider nothing as desperate,
mm-hmm.
To meet and surmount every obstacle with resolution and contrivance. And he said, I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past. He really did have faith in the people to overcome the difficulties. One other quote that I love is that he said, we too shall encounter follies. Obviously, we're in follies right now.
Right.
But if great, they will be short. If long, they will be light. And the vigor of our people will get the better of them. And I think the kinds of work that you're doing, Peter, on the show, the sentiments that you're continuing to express are part of the vigor of the people trying to return our country and make us aware again.
Well, I hope so.
Vision and virtues that we all cherish that make America what it is.
Right. I think it goes to what you have said here. Well, I heard it in the last minute, but really it's pervasive in what you said throughout the show, Eric. And that is that the idea of America is really, again, if I may paraphrase, an idea. It's not so much, you can think of the United States of America as a geographical place and our particular form of government and the prosperity that we enjoy far beyond almost any other place on earth. But to me, that's all rooted in the idea of America, the idea of individual liberty. And as Jefferson said, paraphrasing, the only purpose of government is to protect those rights, and to help people pursue happiness, as, he declared, of course, in the Declaration of Independence. And if we lose that idea, then it, in some sense, it doesn't really matter how prosperous we are or whatever. All else is going to be lost if we lose that idea. I mean, because that, to me, is the foundation. That's where the prosperity flowed from, is that idea. And And I sit here and I think, do enough of us share that idea to hold on to it and to resist these forces of tyranny that I see, you know, looming there on the horizon? And or are we going to lose it and just acquiesce to a government that says, we will assume any power necessary to protect you, and we in charge know what's best for you? And that really scares me.
That's the fundamental question. You have to say, is it really reasonable to think that ordinary men entrusted with power, it is strong power, almost unlimited power, the way it's been asserted by certain administration officials in recent years, would really have the capability to restrain that use of power and be fair with it in appropriate circumstances in the crisis atmosphere that we're continually told that we're facing.
Right.
I think Jefferson would have said that is unreasonable. You can't have laws on the books that would allow people to do that. And we need to be very attentive to our own liberties. His idea was that you have to resist what he called the tendency of kings, priests, and nobles to advance their own power.
Hold that thought. Sorry, I don't want to lose that thought, so hold that after the break, and we'll have about 7 or 8 minutes left, Eric. Hold on, folks. We'll be right back.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for the remaining few minutes of the show. Eric, sorry I cut you off almost in mid-quote there. If you can just briefly recap and then carry out that quote, because I think that's a a nice way to sort of summarize where we are and wrap up the show.
We've been talking about the tendencies of our current government to start to move against the longstanding rights of the American citizens in so many different ways.
Right.
And this is a concern that Jefferson believed would be eternal, and not only from the government itself, but from alliances with the government. He was always concerned about what he called the alliances of kings, priests, and nobles,
mm-hmm.
by which he meant, you know, combining the power of civil government with the power of organized religion, with the power of large moneyed interests. They were feudal, you know, obviously during his day.
Right.
But now you might say they're corporate, or they're whatever, you know, whatever aggregations of large sums of money that you want to call it. So
right.
That's what we'd say today. And that those institutions and power centers, if you will, in any society are always allying themselves. You can see this happening in Russia right now. Sort of take it out of our own country. The central government of Russia, the Orthodox Church there has reconstituted itself as a civil religion. And all the large centralized large moneyed interests in Russia are allying themselves, if you will, all three institutions of society again, to create a situation where the rights of the citizens are limited.
Mm-hmm.
These are eternal concerns for Jefferson, and he said the citizens have to be, you know, always on their guard. But again, he was a great optimist. He said that America possesses, you know, deep in its heart and in its soul, his word was sacred fire. The sacred fire of freedom and self-government, from whence it is to light up the other nations of the region, the regions of the earth, should the other regions ever become susceptible of its benign influence. And he said that we are the hallowed ark of human hope and happiness. This is the quintessential optimistic Jefferson. And if we can just try to adhere and get acquainted again with his principles and his vision. This is one of the reasons I put Light and Liberty together. It's pure Jefferson. There's no spin, there's no
right.
criticism, there's no analysis. It's Jefferson's own words, capturing his own philosophy, his own wisdom. And I find that whenever I get into Jefferson in this fashion, I find my spirits being uplifted, and I feel myself energized again in my own personal possibilities in life, and as well as our societal potentials. It's just great. When you read Jefferson in his own words, you just feel better about the future of our country.
Well, let's make sure others know how to get a hold of that, because I'm sure many of our listeners feel indebted to you for having taken, as I said, the voluminous works of Jefferson, because I wouldn't know where to begin to read through them, and you've distilled them down into this gem of this compilation called Light and Liberty. Can they get that at Amazon.com or where?
Yes, it's available at Amazon.com. It's available at the Colonial Williamsburg bookstore there and online, other brick-and-mortar outlets as well. We also have a website for the book, if I might mention it.
Sure, please.
It's the name of the book, Light and Liberty, all together, no spaces, .org.
Light and Liberty.org.
Comments on the book, Light and Liberty, from some well-known American and international figures, and some sample chapters and so forth. And again, for those who have a generalized fondness for Thomas Jefferson, like so many have, when you actually read his writings in this distilled form, it really validates your fondness for Jefferson and makes you feel good about the prospects of our country once again.
Well, that's very uplifting. I appreciate your first of all, being on the show, Eric, and that does give me some hope, and that I guess I felt rather pessimistic, in just these last few remarks I said. But let's make sure people know you. The spelling of your last name is Peterson with an N, P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N, and the book, again, is Light and Liberty, and so go to Amazon.com or lightandliberty.org and get yourself a copy of the book, and you too can have all these quotes, as he said, no spin, just the direct quotes of Thomas Jefferson himself. So, Eric, thank you very much for taking time on this Sunday afternoon to come on the show and enlighten us with the words of Thomas Jefferson.
With recent